Now we're here with Gunnar Scott. How are you, Gunnar?
I'm pretty well. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing okay, doing okay. Diego went back home. He felt that he had to check, because he was babysitting somebody else's house, and I didn't know that, so he's not going to spend the night.
Oh, that's too bad.
It is, but he ate a whole bunch of food.
That sounds like Diego.
Yeah, my mother made a bunch of homemade meatballs and stuffed shells and all this really great stuff. So,
did you save some for me?
Well, actually, I have a big pan of it. So if you make me come to MTPC's office this week.
Well, the office is actually closed until Monday. So, yeah, there's nobody there. We're taking a holiday.
That's all right. That's okay. You work really hard. And, you know, I want to thank you for that, too, for the work you do at the Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition. You know, thank you for all of that.
Well, you know, I make you work there, too, so.
Yeah, but, you know, Gunner's just the slave driver. You can't help but work because you can just picture him with a whip going, ka-chish. No, he makes it fun, too, so that's really important. But so Diego told me, we were playing the Hanukkah song a little earlier, and him and I were on live, and he said that you were Jewish.
Well, I'm half Jewish, and I should say half my family is Jewish, and the other half is Christian, and I like all holidays, really. So I do Hanukkah and Christmas, and all that good stuff. And when I was a kid, we'd have the Hanukkah room and the Christmas room.
Oh, cool. See, I was upset because you never showed me your menorah.
I actually don't have anything in my house because I don't really... I do that with my family, and I think we just kind of do the winter solstice thing at home. So.
Oh, cool. It's all cool. I went on this wordplay thing with menorah, and I got Diego giggling about it. About Gunnar's menorah.
Oh, God, I can only imagine.
It was pretty hilarious. I should have recorded that part, that segment, but I didn't. It would have been very, very funny for you to hear now. But anyway, so what's going on? Are you having a good holiday night? I know that you went to your family's house tonight and everything.
Yeah, I went down to Plymouth, where the pilgrims landed, supposedly, and had dinner with my sister and her boyfriend and my dad, and exchanged gifts and all that good stuff. So yeah, it was good, and we and my sister rolled out a ham, which I thought was pretty cool, and nice. My boyfriend has a English bulldog named Dozer, who probably weighs, I don't know, like 100 pounds or whatever.
Wow.
And my dad has 4 cats, so it's like a farm almost over there. And so that was good, and I drove back and got some Chinese food for my husband, and we just had some of that, and he's watching some movie that, you know, has people getting blown up, and you know, very a nice, you know, holiday film.
Yeah, because he's such a manly man.
Yeah, my husband is, yes, super. He's Mr. Man.
He's Mr. Man. He's not fat.
He takes man to the ninth degree.
He's not fagtabulous like me.
Well, he is pretty fagtastic. I mean, he's really mantastic as well.
He is.
He's not as fagalicious as you are.
Well, thank you. But no, I know Lee too, and I'm getting to know him a little bit better. I get to talk to him a little more every time we meet, and he is a really good guy.
He's very sweet, and he's a little bit on the shy side, but yeah, he's pretty great. He does some great work in the world, and
yes, he does.
Works really hard, and he works at Cambridge Cares About AIDS and oversees their programming for trans women and for their gay and bi men's program and their needle exchange, and, you know, works with the parts of the community that some people, you know, don't pay attention to. So, it's, you know, it's really important stuff that he does, and it's one of the top 10 reasons why I love him.
Oh, you know, I got to get him on the show to talk about the stuff that he does, because I really...
Yeah, sure, he would love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll bet he would. I'll bet he'd be jumping up and down.
In his low-key kind of way, definitely.
Yeah, Yay.
You gotta get him to talk about the cats. That's what he likes to talk about.
Oh, and that's fine with me. I'm a newfound cat lover, so you know I'm all about the cat.
Yep.
In fact, I think I've bored some of my listeners to tears with the cat stuff. But it's just it's amazing owning or not owning, because I don't ever feel like I own an animal. I feel like, you know, we cohabitate. And it took her about 2 years to train me, but I think that I'm there now.
Yeah, you're her person, and she'll tell you what to do.
Exactly. You should have seen, because Diego came in his current boss's car with their dogs and everything, and he's such a wonderful, you know, he takes care of pets awesome, and it's, you know, great to see him like that. But my cat gave him the dirtiest look. And just stared at him like, yeah, you have the dogs. Because I was talking about, because I didn't know if Diego was going to stay. And I said, well, we can take the, you know, we can petition the house off, cat section, dog section, and that will be fine. I wanted them to all be happy for Christmas. And she just kind of knew. And she was looking at him like, you're the one with the dogs. And I don't even want to talk to you. I'm not going to meow near you. And, oh, yeah, you should have seen him. It was hilarious because he's like, what did I do? And I'm like, oh, she knows about the dogs.
Right.
I told her. So, yeah, people think I'm nuts, but, you know, what are you going to do? But now you have two cats.
I do. I have two cats. I have Big Kitty, who is a big kitty, and he's almost 4 years old, and we actually got him a week after we got legally hitched. It was kind of like, we should get married, and then you get a pet together.
And have a kid.
It really solidifies the deal, you know?
Yes.
And so he's been around for quite a while, and then I just got a kitten on my birthday last spring. His name is Fred, and Fred is not even quite a year old, and Big Kitty is, we got the kitten because I thought Big Kitty was kind of like lonely or depressed, and no, he's just mellow, and Big Kitty's pretty much like, what the hell is this crazy orange furball running around the house? So, and Fred is definitely more interactive and more has a different kind of personality. Big Kitty's very laid back. Fred is very much like, hey, what's going on? Can I get in your business? And he was helping me wrap presents earlier today, which you can imagine what that was like.
Oh, yeah, they're nosy. My cat is extremely nosy.
Oh, totally.
You know, my cat will put its... I come home from grocery shopping, and I put the bags on the table, and the cat will jump up and stick his head in her head in each bag, and you know, be like, well, what do we got here?
Yep.
And she doesn't like people food, so it's not like she wants to eat anything that I have. She just wants to know what it is.
Yep, that's totally my cat.
You know, she's just different. It's different for me because I've owned dogs, you know, most of my adult life, and to have a cat is just, yeah, very different for me, but equally as rewarding. So,
yeah.
You know, my mother just bought her a bed because you know, my mother is like grandma.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious because my mother treats her just like she would like a child. So she bought her this cat bed, and it looks like a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a face and a tail, and it's really, really soft. It's like, I want to use it for my pillow. And
people would start talking about you.
I'm sure. Like they don't already.
Only because I spread the rumors.
Well, that's, you know, see, tell all your friends. So I put this bed down, and the cat looked at me like, you really expect me to like lay in that when I have a down comforter that you just put on your bed?
Mm-hmm.
So she actually like yawned at me and went and jumped on the bed that Karen just made, because my mother bought us this really cool like memory foam and a real nice down comforter, and I'm like, hoo hoo, all excited. But and I told my mother, I'm like, the cat's totally just going to adopt this. That's it.
That's funny.
Yeah, because it takes, and I don't know about your cats, but it takes my cat a while to, she has to sniff everything, and then and it's up to her, like it's within her time frame for her to get used to something. Or
mm-hmm.
You can't, like dogs, you can throw something down and the dog will be all over it.
Yep.
You know, but cats, no. They're inspecting it. They're making sure it's what they want. It's, you know, it's like they're shopping.
Totally.
It's hilarious. But anyway, let's talk some more about you know, the wonderful things that you do at MTPC, because I think that that's extremely important. I mean, we don't have to be that deep about politics and all that stuff, but I mean, you're the executive director of the Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition. You're the first executive director.
Yep.
And so how is that working out for you so far? I mean,
oh, you people make me tired.
You people make me tired.
It's working out. I mean, it's working out really great. I think there's very few transgender political organizations around the country that have at least one paid staff person. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's like a handful of us, you know, not counting like national organizations. But so, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to get paid to do this work. And, you know, I've been doing trans activism. I consider, I actually consider November like kind of like my anniversary. Mm-hmm. Because the first kind of activism I started to do was around trans issues was when Rita Hester was murdered. So I'm celebrating my 10-year trans activist kind of
history.
Yeah. So I have a little bit of a cold, and I've taken some cold medicine, so I'm not quite all together. So, you know, the fact that I can, I people often say, like, what are your plans? Like, and it's like, well, I've had two dream jobs in a row. Like, what do you do after that? So I worked for a long time. I worked at the Network LaRed, which was a domestic violence program for lesbian, bi, trans folks, and I was there for 7 years. And as a survivor of domestic violence, it was a really healing process for me to work there and to advocate for people and do trainings and organizing and stuff like that, and be accepted as a trans person in that organization. I was the first trans person, you know, hired there, and helped build the organization's kind of street cred around trans issues. And they've had several. They have a lot of trans volunteers now, and other trans people have worked there. So that was amazing. And then to be able to do this, to be, you know, have the privilege of being the executive director of the Mass Transgender Political Coalition is a privilege to do this. And I just want to do the best job I can for people. And, you know, we don't know how long the money will last, especially in this economy. So I'm trying to, I kind of work double time because I really want to try to make as much change as possible, knowing that, you know, we may not have the funds to have somebody full time. And then, you know, we just got refunded for another year. So gives me another year to work on our bill and do all kinds of other stuff that we want to do, and try to get as much done, and hopefully, you know, build up our credibility in the grant and fundraising communities, and have people donate to us, because that's what keeps us going. So,
and you know, one of the things that I noticed, and I really want to point this out, because I don't know how many people know this, and it's I've been in the office when Gunnar gets there, and I've left way earlier than Gunnar. Gunnar is always there every day after day after day, and more than, it's not an 8-hour a day job, and this is something that people need to know. I've seen him come in at like 9 o'clock in the morning and go home at 10 o'clock at night, or just say, well, I have a meeting now and I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to, and just, it's just a continuous, it's not like, well, I'm going to sit around now and have some fun and party. It's an incredible, and it's strenuous. It's always, you're always like, okay, you know, this person called in this way, I got to do this, and it's not a, well, a laid back job.
No, it's not.
Far from
it.
I mean,
I'm not a laid-back person either, so.
No, but it's always like there's always a gazillion things that need to be done and little funding, and you're trying to find ways around, well, what's the cheapest way to do this? So that, mm-hmm. So it's not like you go, oh, well, we got all this money and we're going to just blow it on. It's not like that. And I want to tell people this, too, because it's if you live in a state that already has rights, donate to another state that doesn't. Donate to, you know, to like the Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition. And of course, you know, if you live in a state that, like, if you live in Massachusetts, please. And, you know, I know it's around Christmas, and it's, well, it's almost Christmas Day here. But if you haven't bought somebody a gift yet, and they're an LGBT person, what better gift to give them than a donation in their name?
Right. We'll send a handwritten card to that person. You know, definitely we could do that. And I would say, you know, one of the big things that I hope to be a part of and support is other states and other what we call the state and large city trans political groups. You know, help them also get to a place where they can have staff people, because really we need to do this work for ourselves. We can't, you know, we have some great allies out there in the lesbian, gay, bi community, as well as the, you know, the kind of lefty straight community, but we really need to be doing this for ourselves. And, you know, it's really important for us to stand up and be activists and speak out. And that activism looks different for everybody. And I think that sometimes some of the confusion, or, you know, like I hear from people, well, I'm not really an activist. It's like, well, there's all different types of activism. And the type of activism I do isn't necessarily the same type that someone else is going to do. I mean, you and I do some similar activism, but we also do some different stuff. And,
right. You
know, one way to be an activist is to financially support organizations. Another way is that you know, we have some people who are not necessarily very out in their living stealth, and they participate by, when we have a mailing, just coming in and stuffing envelopes and that type of stuff. You know, there's all different ways that people can be participating. And some of those folks, you know, when we were working on the statewide non-discrimination law for trans inclusion in 2007-2008, we had folks who were stealth who did call their legislators. They did not disclose that they were trans, and they just said, you know, this is an issue that's important to me, and I think, you know, I'm a constituent of yours, and I want you to support this. And they don't, you know, people don't need to come out. You know, it's better, you know, it's great for us when people can come out and they're safe to do that and tell their story, because, you know, that's how change happens, is by somebody knowing and talking with a trans person, you know. But if someone's not able to do that, you know, I want to make sure that people are emotionally and physically safe and don't lose their jobs because they're, you know, taking risks that, you know, they may not have to do. So there's all different ways to do that. We have, you know, and that's part of my work, is to help support people and advocating for themselves, or whatever that looks like. So, it's an amazing job.
And, you know, there are people too that have contacted me since I've started doing this, holiday, the 12 days of Christmas, that have said, I'm really, I want to get active next year, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to get involved with a transgender organization. And that was so, I was floored by the people that have actually called me to tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome, because there are so many ways. If you have privilege and you're a person of means, donate money. If you have time, donate time.
Right.
If you can do both, do both. You know, it's support a transgender organization. You know, I mean, and Gunnar's right. We have wonderful allies, and I love them all, and I enjoy that they are standing with us side by side. But we can't expect them to do it for us.
Right.
And we shouldn't.
You know, our priorities will never be at the top of the list.
Right.
It might be for a short time, but, you know, trans organizations, it's trans priorities, and I think that we've already seen the history of our issues being, you know, kind of put down towards the bottom, and why we have some, you know, we only have 13 states that have statewide laws. I mean, even with, you know, sexual orientation laws, we don't have all 50 states yet either. I mean, the work is so uneven, and if folks Google our website and go on masttpc.org, on our resource guide, we have a listing of all the statewide and city trans groups across the country, and if I missed any, please let me know, and I'll put them up there. But, you know, we have a loose coalition of statewide and large city trans political groups. We're going to be meeting up at Creating Change in Denver. We have a caucus, and so if you're a member of any of those state or city political trans political groups, please come to our caucus. And we're trying to build a movement. And so myself, with Mason Davis and Tobias from Florida, and Pauline Park from New York, we've been talking about how can we support each other and support, you know, trans activists in other states that maybe don't have a group going, or their group's really small. And, you know, one of the things I've done is talk with folks in different, you know, some of the New England states, and shared resources, and you know, called on the folks in Connecticut and asked them, you know, if they started their state bill before us, and asked them for their support, and folks in Vermont, and you know, that's what we need to do. Is, you know, we need to step up and support each other, because this is who we have. This is our family. You know.
That's right. Yes, and that's what I've been stressing. Thank you for saying that. It's almost like you've been listening to every show I've done.
Well, you and I, we have an ESP and that umbilical cord, so even if I don't hear it, I know it.
You know about it. It's true. And Gunnar and I talked about this a little bit earlier, you know, during the 12 days that I've been broadcasting, have gotten closer, and I'm really excited about that. We didn't know each other very well.
Yeah.
And now we're getting to know each other better and developing a trust, and you know, and that's what you need to do with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just get out there and volunteer and work and do whatever it is that you need to, and you make another friend. You know, I really feel like Gunnar and I are becoming good friends, and there's never, you know, you can never have too many.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the other part of my life, that, as you know, is that you know, I do this full-time job, and then I'm trying to finish my bachelor's degree, and so I went back to school a couple of years ago, and I'm in a program that's they call it low residency. So I go to Goddard College in Vermont, and it's a small liberal arts school, and they've had quite a few trans people who have gone to school there and graduated. So that's one of the reasons why I picked this school, is because I wanted to go somewhere that also, you know, I didn't have to trans 101 for, kind of.
Yeah.
But so I do this full-time program, and my senior project that I'm working on is interviewing trans leaders in the Boston area about their experiences, particularly around the time when what I call the end of crisis, when you know, trans folks were removed from the end of bill, and then there was that 2-month period that we were trying to get back in. And so I've been talking with some folks, and I talked with you about this, and the other reason I did this was because I also wanted to get to know other trans people that do activism in my community better. And I mean, everyone I've interviewed I've known for at least the longest was 10 years, and the shortest I think was 7. So but I feel like I learned something and grew my appreciation for each of these people I interviewed grew exponentially, and mm-hmm. and it also just cemented that idea. You know, I have in the back of my mind that phrase that I don't know who exactly said it, but at some point it was said that, you know, we haven't done enough work, we haven't done enough activism, we haven't spoken enough, you know, we haven't spoken up enough, and we need to do more. And I think we do need to do more, but that other kind of how that got turned around by some people who aren't necessarily fans of the trans community was, you know, that we just showed up recently and we're trying to tag on to this, yeah. to the, you know, to the gay agenda, so to speak. And so the other piece was, you know, looking at, you know, I've been doing trans activism for 10 years. I know I'm not the only one. And I, you know, for some of the people I interviewed, they've been doing it for 30 years.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like, and Stonewall was like, what, 4 years ago? So, you know, and I also researched Sylvia Rivera and Virginia Prince.
Yep.
And found out amazing things particularly about Sylvia Rivera and all the work she did on gay rights, and the inclusion of trans people in the early gay rights bills and how trans people got kicked out of those.
Yep.
So I think, you know, we have to learn our own history.
Yes.
And we need to tell our young people that history as well. So I've been really I'm really happy that I went back to school and I just chose to go this path, because it's really helped me to understand and speak up about, like, no, we've actually been doing this a long time.
Yeah, we've been doing it. And, you know, I said that at a meeting that we had with a legislative assistant, that, you know, just because the word transgender might not have existed 30 years ago or 40 years ago, it doesn't mean that we didn't exist.
Right.
We've always existed, and we've always stood by and fought, but the language wasn't there. So you can't discount us just because the word transgender didn't exist. I mean, that's
right.
ridiculous.
Right. I mean, you know who paid for the first Pride Parade in New York City. Lee Brewster. She's a drag queen, or she was a drag queen. She was pretty much aligned with the cross-dressing community. Put out a magazine called Drag Magazine, which I got to see a couple copies at when I was at IFGE the other day. But, you know, here was somebody who we would consider under the trans umbrella who fronted, you know, footed the bill for the first Pride Parade in New York City in 1971.
Right, and yet we don't belong there.
Right.
We've been told, we've actually been told by certain members of the community that when the press focuses on people, it's us that they focus on, or the most outlandish, or the most visibly queer, and it was made known to us in the 80s that we weren't welcome.
Right. And, you know, it's really, I mean, I think for me, I also come out of the queer community. That's my experience. That's the other half of my, I consider the other half of my heart.
Right.
So when I, you know, when things like Enda happens, I'm like, so I have to choose?
Yes.
That's not how it should be.
I know.
That is so not how it should be. I mean, my background is in direct action activism. I started with the Lesbian Avengers and did crazy, you know, direct action stuff. And, you know, and the people in my life, most everyone is, you know, under that GLBT umbrella. And, like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's not, I should not have to choose which side of the community, which side of me I am going to stand with.
And that's exactly right, because, you know, Gunnar, I feel the same way. I don't want to have to mourn the loss of my queer community. And I was brought up, I came out at 15 years old in the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've paid my dues. I fought that fight, and I don't feel that I should be expelled from that.
Right.
You know, I mean, I no longer identify as a lesbian, and I don't take up that space, but I'm still part of that queer community.
Right. That's my history. I'm not going to rewrite that. I mean,
exactly.
You know, like, and you can't do that. I mean, for some people, they may edit out parts of their lives because of emotional reasons for that. And I totally get that. There are parts of my life that I don't, that I've kind of edited out too because it's just too hard. So I totally understand when people do that. But, you know, I am very much rooted in the queer community. I'm partnered with guy, you know, I identify as masculine, you know, so when I go out in the world, people read me as a gay man anyways, like, no matter, you know, no matter how much more I transition, I'm still going to look gay.
Right. And, you know, and I felt fear being viewed as a gay man or being read as a gay man. I felt fear, and damned if I'm not going to get my head bashed in because I'm being viewed as a gay man and then be booted out of that community because I'm not.
Right.
It's just an insanity. You can't, you know, it's not right. It's not right. We all need to stand together and or we will be picked off one by one. We won't.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I mean that's what you know. People who hate us, they don't see the differences.
No, when they're killing you, when they're bashing your head in and killing you, they don't differentiate that you're a white upper middle class gay man, or they don't beat you up saying you big tranny. You are the same to them.
Right. I mean, it's the same thing when people are passing laws and policies against what I call the other, or our, you know, the GLBT community. I mean, if you just look at what happened in Arkansas with the passage of the law to outlaw any unmarried couple from being foster parents or for being for adoption,
right.
Like it affects single straight people. It affects, you know, GLBT people across the board, regardless, you know, like if you can't get married in that state, you know, that's the first thing that they're going to look at. So, you know, we really need to pay attention to all this type of policy. I mean, the trans community also needs to pay attention to any kind of immigration stuff because that always affects us.
Yes.
Particularly around IDs. And that's another community that we really need to partner with. We need to learn from the mistakes of folks that came before us and really build those coalitions. I mean, I am very much a liberal, radical kind of activist, and I, you know, recognize that that's not where everyone in the community comes from, but I think we have to look at how do we build coalition with communities, and that means all kinds of communities. I mean, I got invited to the Log Cabin Republican Christmas party last weekend, you know, and I think it's important to build coalition with those folks. It's important to build coalition with the Stonewall Democrats, you know, the ACLU. Like, we've got to look and find our common grounds and not the places that we're not common. So
right.
It's just, you know, that's how we're going to get ahead in this world, and that's how we're going to make this place a better place for all of us.
And that's why I'm very thrilled that Barack Obama is our next president. I am so very thrilled because that is what he believes as well. And I think we need to take that and run with it the same way that he is. Because it's proven to be it's already proven to work. I mean, you had a person that's not even politically connected call up Rick Warren. Melissa Etheridge called up Rick Warren and just said, "Hey, let's have a conversation."
Mm-hmm.
And then he took all the anti-gay stuff off his website.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people.
We'll see how long that lasts. I mean, it's a good thing. I'm happy that he did that, but I mean, I think it's the other side of that too. Is that it still hurts? Like,
yes, it does.
It still hurts, and you know, I just want to state for the record that MTPC is a nonpartisan organization. We don't, you know. Make
right.
endorsements of candidates or anything like that. And we work with all political parties because, you know, transphobia and policies against trans people come from all political parties.
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, that's, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to imply that.
I separate my personal philosophy from the organization.
Right. And I didn't mean to imply that was MTPC's position either. And it's because you're right.
Well,
we do.
I have all kinds of people who participate in MTPC from all kinds of political backgrounds.
Right. And I've met one of our best friends, and I know this sounds like such a horrible, but for a long time friend of both my wife Karen and I is a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, he's a wonderful person, and we love him, and we go places together, and we do all of these different things, and we have different views, but it doesn't mean that we can't. But his views on LGBT issues are extremely liberal.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. He's fiscally conservative. So
right. He's a fiscal conservative.
Right.
Weld. I mean, Weld. Here in Massachusetts, Governor Weld, he's a Republican, fiscally conservative, but yet he started the first Governor's Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth.
Right.
You know, and he also brought the Grateful Dead to the city of Boston, which made me appreciate him greatly.
That's hilarious, too.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, you can find unlikely friends in all types of places. Don't shut the door in anybody's face. You don't know what you're going to find.
Right. I mean, my problem I have is when we're mixing religion with politics. As somebody who is not affiliated, you know, I grew up in a multi-religious household, and I appreciate things from all types of religions, but someone's religious view should not be affecting how I live my life and what policies get passed. And that's what really irks me when I see that happening. And that is what's used. Because one religion view is dominant in this country, it's not appropriate for everyone else. And I think that is what I have a problem with.
Well, we need the separation of church
companies
and state.
Right now, but
well, the separation of church and state is
right.
we need to have that. We really
and
do.
It certainly has not happened in a lot of years.
Well, because because if you're going to indoctrinate religion into your government, which one should you do? Should you induct? And you know, it's just you can't do it all, and we shouldn't do any. So if you're going to be by the people and for the people, that means all of the people, not some
freedom
of the people.
Of religion for all of us, not
right?
For some of us.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, especially thinking here we are on Christmas Eve talking about that. You know, this is a huge holiday for Christians, and it's also Hanukkah this evening as well, which is not such a huge holiday as the capitalist society likes to make it out to be. But you know, I think we have to definitely look at how can we work harder to separate church and state from this country, because it's not helpful.
No, it's not. It's not, and it's been a hindrance to passing laws that will protect and help all the people.
And it's like, you know, and it's not helpful on the other side for someone's, you know, for religion and for spirituality, you know, for people to be connected to that and not have to have it connected to the politics in that way. Like, how do you get to... It doesn't mean that I don't think... I mean, I find that many communities of faith are also very much social justice activists and work really hard around those issues, and I think that that is appropriate as well, and how do we support those types of actions happening? Because if it wasn't for the religious communities, some of the services around homelessness and poverty, you know, wouldn't have happened. So we also have to look at, like, how do we work hand-in-hand around those issues, too.
Absolutely. No, you're right. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to maneuver around all these different types of politics and religions and issues. But, and like you were talking about, for instance, like Hanukkah, that's a very interesting thing, because I'm sure that if stores could figure out a way to make more money off of a different religion and to capitalize on that, they would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I get so aggravated with that, with the whole, I can't even go, we couldn't even go, we tried to go to the grocery store today, because we had to pick up a few things, but it was incredibly difficult to maneuver around, everybody hustling and bustling and doing all the, and I realize, of course, you know, that this is, but people weren't happy doing it.
Yeah.
That none of them were happy. And you know, it's one thing if you're celebrating something and everybody's joyful and everything is wonderful and you're doing this because it's a good idea, because you're, but I think that it's become more of an obligation. And I was so upset to watch people, and they're all grumpy and nobody was in a good festive joyous mood, and it's like, well, then why are you doing this?
Well, I mean, I think the other thing can also, I feel things are a little bit down now too because of such the economy issues. I mean, it's really bad. You know, it's just really bad. And you know, I mean, I think for our community, we know what it means to be poor, because we have such a huge number of people in our community that are dealing with poverty issues because of transphobia and discrimination. So, in some ways, I was talking to someone the other day, and she's like, yeah, one thing about being, you know, kind of poor is that you don't have a retirement fund, so you didn't lose any money. So it's like, right. Yeah, it's true. Like, I think for some people it was a wake-up call and a shock, and it's a little scary. I am really, you know, particularly for our community and people who are already on the edge, like, they're falling over, and who's going to help them? And that's what I really worry about. And that actually makes me remind me is one of the things that I've been myself donating to is the Transgender Emergency Fund that Jesse from Central Mass started about a year ago. And the Trans Emergency Fund provides funds for people who are dealing with emergency issues, so help, you know, paying rent or getting a first class of security or, you know, food if somebody's lost their job, you know, and it's a short-term thing. But if... you know, I believe that, you know, this is a really good cause that people should also, you know, if people's got $5, $10 to donate to this emergency fund, we're supporting our community, and this is a way to do that directly. So I'm just going to give a little plug for that, and people want to know more about that, they can get in touch with me, or they can touch with you, and we can...
Yes.
And I think you definitely should have Jesse on at some point, because he's a pretty amazing guy.
And I didn't know. In fact,
yeah, that he started this emergency fund, and you know, they've given out a lot of money, and we've got to find some folks to help, you know, make sure this continues, because it's supporting people in our community who are, you know, falling over that edge.
Even money or even a food drive or something wouldn't be a bad idea either.
Yeah.
You know, canned goods and all that stuff, because churches do that all the time, and why wouldn't we?
Well, I think, you know, that we should talk about that. I mean, part of not, you know, why people may or may not do food drives or clothing drives is just, where do you put it? The storage issue, especially, like, you've been to my office.
There's no room. Yeah, there's just no room. You're right. But I'm wondering if they have that. Or even, how about this, though? Even you can go to Market Basket.
Gift cards.
And you know, my brother's girlfriend gave Karen and I a gift card from Market Basket.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that was one of the most thoughtful gifts, because we really can use that. You know, I mean, we're not rich, and it's wonderful to have, you know, somebody think about those things without without it being in any, you know, insulting or anything, you know,
right.
Because some people are very prideful, and I'm not, I don't care, you know, but it's like, but honestly, it's a great idea to give a gift card like that.
Yeah.
And when you give them, it doesn't have to be in anybody's name. It's a card, and there's just a monetary value attached to
it. Right, yeah. I mean, that gift card would be great, you know, again, like, they provide short-term financial assistance to folks, and for some people, it's also helping them stay on their hormones, so they, you know, they don't have the money to pay for them. Like, it's that kind of stuff, you know, things that people need to live every day in our community. So I just, you know, my other, you know, I have 8 million jobs, so my other job is running a dance night once a month for the queer and trans community in Boston, and we donate part of the proceeds from that night, it's called The Neighborhood, to different nonprofit organizations, and we've actually, the Trans Emergency Fund is one that we typically only give like once a year to eat, you know, to, we pick out 12 different ones, but the Trans Emergency Fund we've actually been doing a couple times more because, you know, it's so, you know, $100 goes such a huge way, you know, for somebody paying their phone bill or whatever, so it's kind of like the pet one that we've taken on, and we still donate to other places, and particularly youth and other smaller nonprofits that, you know, we don't give a lot, it's not a huge amount of money, so we know that, you know, the money that we give them is really directly affecting, you know, their services for somebody. So, you know, this is one another way for me to give back to the community because I don't have the time to volunteer right now in my life, but I, you know, can raise some money through doing some of the events I do.
You say that you don't volunteer, but when you consider all of the things that you do, I mean, if you know, most people work an 8-hour-a-day job. So take 8 hours out of the day and say, okay, this is your job. The rest of it is volunteer, Gunnar. So, you know, when you say you don't have time to volunteer, you don't have time to volunteer for anything else. But
yeah.
Think about what you just said that you do.
I guess I do, like, I go to BAG, the Boston Alliance for GLBT Youth, once a month and work with the trans youth that go there, and I'm mentoring a couple of youth right now, which is not volunteer. That's just, you know, an amazing gift to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's not volunteer, though. This is all time. All time-consuming things. And you do this, though, all the other stuff that you do, whether it's a gift to you or whatever you might call it, it's volunteering.
Well, I just, like, I'm somebody who is has a little bit of ADD, maybe, or I don't know. I don't sleep a lot, so I spend my time trying to just make this world a better place. And I don't know what, I think part of it is because I was homeless myself, and I'm just trying to get back to people who helped me when that happened to me. And I think it's just, you know, in my nature to try to make this world a little bit better and leave it in a better state than what I found it.
Yes.
But, you know, everybody does something different, and this is what I can do right now. It doesn't mean I can do this forever. I mean, definitely not, and dealing with my own health issues now, and I've got to work that out, so.
Right.
Being trans in this world is not always the healthiest thing.
The most optimal.
It doesn't always make your day.
Yeah. What's this happening now?
Oh, God. Why is somebody asking me for the time again and they have their own watch? You're just doing a voice check. Hello.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
come on, people.
See, that's when I'd love to really be able to mess with people, but I can't, my voice won't go higher because it just doesn't. And I would love for it to be able to so that I could mess with people that way.
Yeah, I just start speaking in French sometimes.
In
not
French.
Real French, but fake French. Just to see what happens.
Just to see what happens.
I know, I'm awful.
No, that's hilarious. Are you kidding? One of the things that you're doing, because it's not volunteer or anything, is you're also DJing on New Year's Eve.
I am. We're doing a fundraiser for MTPC in Boston, New Year's Eve. It's called Sparkle. It's a dance party at the Midway Cafe on Washington Street in Jamaica Plain, and doors open at 9. And myself and Trey Andre, we're two trainee boys with iPods for DJing. There's a possibility that some of the folks from Imperial Court are going to come by and do a number or two. We're going to have a champagne toast at midnight, plus some hors d'oeuvres and cash bar, and And it's just going to be a really good time, and I'm really excited. It's $10 if you buy tickets online, or $15 at the door, and all that money goes directly to MTPC. We're not, because we're DJing it ourselves, we don't have to hire anybody. So I've been practicing my DJing skills. I was DJing in college the first time around back 20 years ago. So we're going to have an eclectic bunch of music, and it's going to be a good time. And I'm really excited just to hang out with folks and do that. So I hope people will come out and have a good time.
And it's run by all trans people.
Yeah, we're going to have trans people at the door. We're going to have trans security. The bartenders are not trans, but they will play a trans person if I ask them to. they're great. The bar that we are having this at, the Midway, they've been hosting queer events for the last 10-plus years. And I've been doing, we do the neighborhood at this bar, and the two guys, a couple of brothers who run it, who are, they've been running the bar for 20 years, they're straight guys, but they are really invested in the queer community, and Dave and Jay are always like, they read Bay Windows, so they're always like, oh, Gunnar, I saw you in the paper, and, you know, what's going on with your bill, and, like, they really, they know what's going on, and they're just, you know, they're really nice, and they just really, you know, they talk about, like, they want to make sure that their space is safe, and, for trans folks and for queer people, and they don't, you know, if somebody comes into the bar and starts giving people a hard time, they throw them out, and they're really good guys, and yeah, it's been really awesome to do the neighborhood there, and I'm really excited. They said, you know, what are you doing for New Year's Eve? You know, do trans people have a place to go that's going to be safe, you know, that they can party in? And I said, I don't know, let me look around. And they're like, come on, you know, take, you know, have the bar, you know, do your event here, it would be great. So I'm really excited about it and really appreciate them letting us do that, you know, giving us the space to do that. So
nice.
You know, unfortunately our Halloween party got canceled, so it's kind of, this is also to make up for that, you know, shortfall in our budget that we thought we were going to, the revenue we thought we were going to get from the Halloween party. So this is going to help with that.
Yeah, this will be awesome. So if you don't have a place to go on New Year's Eve, go there. I mean, where else can you go for even if you buy tickets at the door for $15 to get in, there's not many places on New Year's Eve, and to be with all your family.
Yeah, right. You know? And it's like, you know, totally cool. And, you know, one of the reasons I started the dance night was because I heard people were having, you know, they were going out to clubs and they wanted to have a good time with their friends, and people were giving them a hard time about their IDs because, you know, whether they're, you know, if they're a cross-dresser and, you know, their ID looks like one thing and they look like something else, or if their gender marker, they haven't been able to change it yet, but their name's changed, you know. And so I was like, let's, my friend Hannah and I was like, let's start something, and, you know, like, let's create a space. And so we did that, and it's been going really well, and it's been awesome to see people I haven't seen in a long time, and I really hope that folks come out to Sparkle and hang out with us and have a good time. You know, it's just, it's going to be fun, so, yeah. You know, and it's also because I'm, you know, as some folks know in the Boston area, I'm ending my 9 years of running Gender Crash open mic in January. So because of, I'm really tired, you know.
Because you don't have enough to do. That's what it is.
Yeah. And it is, you know, it's time. Yeah, I have the saying, like, if you're having a good time at the party, then it's time to leave. You know, when you're tired of having a good time, so that you leave with that good memory. And then, you know, Gender Crash has been a great space for people, and it's been really fun for me. But with my senior project due this semester, and, you know, with the bill, I mean, particularly with the bill, because that takes up a lot of energy and time for me, I needed to make some space in my calendar. So, but there's been rumors of some young folks starting up a new kind of open mic that'll be geared toward the queer and trans people, and probably at the same space. So I think that kind of energy will continue. So it's a transitional period for me, if I can use that word without laughing hysterically.
Yeah, I know. You're transitioning again.
I transition all the time.
A constant transition. Oh, Gunnar, thank you so much for all that you do from the bottom of my heart.
Dude, you inspire me. So, you know, there are people in this community that I look up to, and I see what they're doing and how they've lived their lives and the stuff that they do. And, you know, like the people who came before me in particular, like Nancy Nazzaroni and Grace, mm-hmm. and, you know, and my friend Diego and I, and, you know, we...
Yes.
We've been doing stuff together for a long time, and I'm really excited for him to go to D.C., but I'm also really sad because he's not going to be, like, right down the street, like, literally down the street from me.
I know. That's what I hugged him goodbye tonight. You know, he was going back because he's house sitting and as well as dog watching, and it really hit me that I won't see him again probably until February.
Yeah.
That he's going to be starting his job, and it's just another door that's opening for him, and I feel like, oh, this is great, but at the same time I'm going to really miss him being around.
Yeah. I've been with MTPC, I'm one of the founding members for, 7 years now, and he came along six or seven months after we started. So, he's been doing stuff together, and I met him at True Spirit, God, a long time ago. We met at True Spirit in D.C. to find out that we both lived in Boston.
I've done that, met people in another state and realized we both live in the same state.
Yeah.
Yep, that's, oh, God, but it's good. It's such a good thing.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
It is. I mean, think about this. He's the first openly trans person working in Washington, D.C., in such a high position. I mean, what's Bonnie Frank ranked at? Like the seventh most powerful congressman?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he's
probably
ranked really high. I mean, out of, what is it? 400 and, how many congressmen are there? 415 or something like
that.
Don't
make me do math.
It's like 415 or something like that. Anyway, close. Indulge me.
I should know these little...
I know, and I do. And I do. The fact that I can't remember right now is pissing me off. But he's ranked number 7. I mean, for the love of God. Yeah. So, and Diego's going to be his senior policy advisor. I mean, that's... All right, this is wonderful. This is absolutely wonderful. A great opportunity for a transgender person to make this impact and have it not be about the fact that he was trans. And Barney even said, he's just the most qualified. And it's like, this is great. And Diego is qualified.
Mm-hmm.
He is. It's, there's no way he's being tokenized. And I firmly believe that. Firmly. He's been doing his work, so...
Well, I mean, I think, in general, it's time for us as a community to be moving into positions like the one Diego's taking, or other positions in other organizations and things like that. I mean, like just looking around the country, there's very few of us in any kind of executive director leadership position in any of the major LGBT organizations. There's very few in any kind of leadership, management position. I think there's like two, that's not a trans-specific organization, international organization, and then a handful in state organizations. So,
right.
We're really far behind. I was having a conversation with somebody the other night, and she's a lesbian woman. She said, I see the trans community being in the same space that the lesbian community was in about, 10 or 15 years ago. That, there were very few lesbians in positions of power, and it took a long time and a lot of work to get us there, and a lot of us, pulling together and coming together as a community. And she's totally right. She's totally right. And so I really appreciated her acknowledging that and her then saying to me, whatever I can do to make that happen, because, right. I've been there, I've been down that road, and, let me help you. So, it was really great to have somebody acknowledge, that aspect of our community.
Exactly. And I made friends within a bunch of equality groups because I actually did a survey on how many people, how many board members they had, how many employees they had, and how many of each were transgender. I had one group write back to me, and this was because, you could tell that they just didn't understand. Said, we don't have any, this is how many board members we have, none are trans, this is how many employees we have and none are trans, but we have a lot of transgender volunteers. And I was like, oh. And I'm not picking on equality groups, it's other organizations as well. And, You know, so and I did this for a reason. First of all, it's not always the equality groups or the local groups' fault. Sometimes there's just no trans people in the area that they know of that want to be involved, or they've become disconnected.
Right.
So if you're a transgender person in a state that has an equality group, that's,
you need to join them.
Join them. You yeah. need to join them and work with them and get to the point where you are in a position of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't complain about organizations not including us if we don't try to be included.
Right, and one of the things that I try to do is I really want to, you know, MTBC really wants to build leadership and groom people to actually be on boards of other organizations. Like that's, you know, yes, I want people to be part of MTBC and join our, you know, our different chapters that we have and our board and all that stuff. But I also want to help groom people to be on other people's boards, and because we need to do that too. You know, we need to do both. It's
right.
not and or, it's both. So, you know, I've helped, you know, put a couple people on some strategic boards, and you know, we have a lot more to go. And you know, my theory is that there needs to be at least 10 to 20%. You know, if you're an LGBT organization and you do LGBT advocacy work, then 10 to 20% of your board and your staff should be trans, because the same thing with bi, because bi folks also get left off a lot of times.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, just because you have a bi trans person doesn't mean you get both check marks.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I also...
And color doesn't give you all the check marks either.
Right. You get a bi trans person of color. No. But I also noticed that, and getting back to the lesbian community and the lesbian, you know, we're probably where they were. And I understand that. But there's also, first of all, the leadership. I can name two off the top of my head that are executive directors
mm-hmm.
of equality groups. One of the points is that... people in the LGBT community, sometimes where they just want to shorten it, nobody ever says in the lesbian community, they say the gay community, meaning everybody.
Right.
You know, so even, you know, back when lesbians were gaining ground for equality and within LGB, before the T, you know, the word transgender existed, I mean, it was still always the gay movement, the gay this, the gay that. And even now, you get people that are in places of power that will use the word gay to mean LGBT. And these are people that are executive directors of large national organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, language is, I'm very picky about language.
So am I.
There's a couple of things that really, like, whenever I hear it or see it, I'm, like, all over it. And I'm, you know, I drive people crazy. I joked. I was somewhere, and the person sat next to me. I was like, I don't know if you want to sit next to me because I'm kind of a downer, and I'm going to have something to say about everything, so you might want to move.
You might want to move.
Yeah.
But I'm getting to the point where I see all of these things, too. And once you start seeing them, it's hard to close your eyes again.
Yeah.
So and I understand exactly what you mean. The last week, and I don't know if you know this or not, you know how much, and I talk to you about this sometimes when we're at MTPC, but I love mindless comedy. My relaxation is to turn on the tube and watch sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sitcoms that I adore was the New Adventures of the Old Christine.
Oh, yeah.
And Wanda Sykes, who is a newly out lesbian, it doesn't mean that she was, you know, always, you know, I mean, she's been a lesbian for a while, but newly out, and she just joined the board of Equality California.
Wow.
Right, which is wonderful, but, and it doesn't have any reflection on Equality California. I want to point that out right away. And I was just saying that she's getting involved now politically, and one of the things that I saw on the show made me just have a fit, and I haven't seen anything else about it anywhere. And I was watching the show, and in the program, they had lost their gem they lost the gym because they inadvertently, and they didn't realize that they had signed a lease from like a religious right organization that forbid homosexuality and all this stuff, and you could literally lose your gym if you were a homosexual couple or whatever. And her on the show, Christine, and the woman that plays that's Wanda Sykes' character, they got married so that Wanda Sykes could stay in the country. Anyway, so they signed this lease without realizing it. The woman came to the gym to assess the equipment, found out they were married just in conversation, and told them that she was going to take their gym away.
Wow.
So the whole thing then was that they went to the woman and told her, look, we're not lesbians. We just got married, blah, 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 blah. And she said, well, that's an immigration issue, and we don't care about that. We care about you being gay as a moral issue. So she said that, you know, they could re-sign the lease and they could have their gym back, and they didn't want to do that because, to them, they didn't want to work for a company that was bigoted.
Right.
Now, which was wonderful, and I love that message. However, they ended up getting a massage parlor, And Christine's, the guy that plays Christine's brother, went in and got a massage. He came out and he was all upset because he had been touched inappropriately by one of the masseuses. And so they gathered all the girls together and said, you know, we've been hearing of inappropriate behavior in the massage parlor, blah, 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 blah. And this girl turns around and says, what do you mean by inappropriate?
Oh,
and
no.
It was a trans woman. And pegged her as a prostitute, first of all, kept referring to her as he every time after that. He, the tall fella, the guy, on and on and on. And it was just, I was horrified. I have it on DVD.
Well, I think Double A Glad should be all over that.
Well, where are they, is my question. Where is the outrage of this?
We're having happy holiday banter, remember?
Oh, I know. Well, I want to make people, and at the same time, though, when you have an audience, you usually want to make people aware.
Oh, I know. I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm totally there with you, my friend.
Happy holiday banter.
I think it sounds like we need to get a little letter writing campaign into that. How long ago was that show?
This was last Wednesday.
All right, well, I think you need to write that up, my friend, and we can send some emails.
Because I just couldn't believe it. I mean, here you have an activist, and the other person that played, and this really got stuck in my craw because I have issues with the show Will and Grace to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and the person that came on the show to play that religious right person to take the gym away was Megan Mullally.
Oh yeah,
I was like,
well, oh. I think you need to do a little petition and get it going because. I mean, David Letterman also had done some shitty things. Oh, sorry, a while back, and
you can say shitty.
And I started sending emails, and other people sent emails out, and there was no need for that. And I think we need to again take back our power.
Yes.
And let people know. I mean, when Shaw's here in Massachusetts had those crazy commercials with those guys dressed as women as spies, and they were clearly not trying to pass in any kind of way, and the first one was a woman, comes up to the counter and stands next to them, and she pulls her child away from them. That was not called for. What did we do? We flooded them with faxes, phone calls, and emails, and those commercials got pulled.
And I was so upset because, well, first of all, because once again they had a trans woman that was pegged as being a prostitute.
Right.
The other thing was that the whole idea of the show was that why would you want to work for a company that's bigoted to begin with? So they actually were going into the hole, in their on the show, of course, so that they wouldn't work for a company that was against same-sex marriage.
Right.
And while they were doing that, the show itself was being bigoted towards trans people.
Right.
And nobody on that show said, well, I'm not doing this because you got to consider what the show's about. it was just, I couldn't believe my eyes. I really couldn't. So, because of the nature of my recording, broadcasting for 12 Days of Christmas, I had it set on DVR. So and then I put it on disc. I have it on DVD, and there's, You know, I'm going to send sound clips or do whatever I have to take to send it to GLAAD and say, what the heck? You can't. That's a real.
I think we can just do it ourselves. I mean, we should right. do it ourselves.
That's true. All right, you're right. Let's do it ourselves. Because, you know.
Why do we wait for? This is us taking charge of our community.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it yeah. to it. Because it's just, I mean, it's a show that I watch every week, and now I really feel like I can't enjoy it anymore because I feel like the writers and even the actors didn't stand up and say, no, this isn't right. Yeah. Why wouldn't they have thought there was something wrong with that?
Yep, yeah. So I think we should take, you know, we find out, I'll do a little research on the who they write to, and you come up with some text, and we'll
sure.
get people to do a letter writing campaign.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Sure, your listeners would be really into that. There is an easy way to be an activist and not even have to out yourself if you don't want to.
That's right. You can just say that you're upset. You're offended, right? Because how do they know you don't have friends in your life or family members that are trans?
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be you that's trans.
Right.
You know?
Let's just do this. Take charge of this. Let's go.
All right. You're right. That's the way to do it. You're absolutely right. So
I need to take charge of my cold.
I know. Go take charge of your cold. And thank you, Gunnar. Really, thank you so much for joining us and for all the stuff that you do. We really appreciate it. And Gunner's a Trinity Award winner, too.
Yes, I am. I heard that. That was great. I'm shocked and much appreciated. And, yeah, it's pretty. It's an honor.
You're going to give an acceptance speech like it's the Academy Award?
I hope so. I hope I can. I'm going to break out the tuxedo and everything.
Oh, you got it. You got it. It's an honor. It really is. The Trinities are...
Yeah.
You know, they're wonderful things.
We'll chat about that as it gets closer, my friend.
All right. We'll have you on again.
All right. Sounds good. Well, have an awesome night, and hello to the listeners, and I hope this was somewhat entertaining for you, and have a wonderful holiday, whichever one you celebrate. I'd like to spread the cheer all over, and I'll talk to you soon, Ethan.
All right. See you later, Gunnar.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.